Welcome again to another edition of the Red Reporter Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon, and alongside me this week, in studio, as always, Scott. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Doing good.
Good.
Really happy to have spring training baseball back again. This is our first episode in a couple of months, so since sometime in January, I think.
We were talking
about off-season stuff, so this is kind of our, not our 2016 debut, but our season debut, our spring training podcast.
And actually the first podcast in the post-Skip Schumacher era of Major League Baseball.
Oh, it's true. All right. I also need to bring on our other studio panel member this week, Wick Terrell. Wick?
What's up, guys? How are we doing?
In our doing remote good. Studio.
Yeah.
In the studio next door. 1,200 miles away.
Yeah,
exactly. So, that's really the big news of the day. So, really, we made this podcast today as an emergency.
It's actually a we need to talk
about Skip Schumacher's retirement and
completely impromptu,
completely blindsided us.
Yeah,
we had a lot of things planned to talk about today, but. Yeah, Skip Schumacher is an ex-baseball player. So,
Where were you?
5 years from now, how many percentage points on the Hall of Fame ballot do you think Skip Schumacher gets?
I think he gets one vote. I think some Jack Ball from St. Louis will give him a vote.
There are enough St. Louis associated Baseball Writers of America Association members to where. It really wouldn't shock me if he managed to squeeze on the back end of one ballot. I'm trying to remember who it was. David Eckstein got a vote this year, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. If anything, Skip Schumacher is the outfield version of David Eckstein.
Speaking of which, I'm slightly surprised that in the wake of Johnny Peralta screwing his thumb up and being out for 3 to 4 months, that neither David Eckstein nor Skip Schumacher has signed with the Cardinals and hit 3 spring training home runs yet.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They didn't even do the ceremonial, like, we're going to sign Skip Schumacher to a one-day contract so you can retire a Cardinal. He just kind of went out and did it.
What?
They're slacking this.
Was he really that integral for them to do that?
You ask any writer, yes. Gosh. But, okay, here's what we're here. I didn't get that.
Sorry, they're probably going to hire him for, like, coaching staff at this point.
That could be.
Yeah.
That's a possibility.
Gives us a whole new reason to hate him.
So the Reds are in spring training as we speak. As we're recording this, they just finished their ninth game. What's today, nine?
I don't know. Do we count split squads as two?
No.
No, okay.
So I think they lost again today to the Texas Rangers, got knocked around. Pitching staff got knocked around again. So let's just talk, first of all, early impressions. Who's impressed you so far, watching, listening to these games, following them, however we are?
Well, I mean, just looking at the stat lines, Phil Irvin's been pretty good so far, which is a nice surprise, being that part of it's against major league pitching, which you would have thought he's probably a couple of years away, or at least a year and a half away from fully developing. Which maybe it's like the Dave Sapelt show part two. Maybe this is just him getting hot at one time and making the most of it. But it's a good sign, I think, hopefully, that our minor league system isn't as bad as. It's been made out to be, or at least it has been the past couple of years.
And I think Irvin's been one of those guys, too, where, you have that top tier of, minor league outfielders that the Reds have, and Irvin's usually a guy mentioned below that tier. So it's really nice to see him kind of coming out of the gate and, showing why he was a first-round pick.
Yeah, he's always been the and when you talk about Winker, which, right. We've got Winker, and we've got Phil Irvin.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think Irvin's. It's really hard to for, hit 14 home runs last year, playing primarily in the Florida State League. I'm just pulling up the Florida State League stats where the league leader hit 14 home runs. Now, obviously, he had a couple of those in Pensacola, but it's a league that massively suppresses offense, and it's very, very pitching dominant year after year. And it's funny that we look up and say, oh, you know, like Amir Garrett and Nick Trabiaso had some impressive seasons last year, but we don't really give the Asso homer the other day, as I think they kind of deserve. And if you flash back 2-3 years ago, if they'd been playing advanced A-ball in Bakersfield, which had a 350-foot center field and everybody hit home runs, you might look up and say, wow, these guys just put on great offensive displays. It's kind of hard to extrapolate that with that big of a change between the advanced A leagues that the Reds had their affiliates in. But Irvin's looked great thus far. The one thing that I will add a caveat, just based on watching the nearly 4 hours worth of baseball last night when the Reds beat the Giants, pitchers are still throwing a lot of fastballs in spring training right now. And one thing that Irvin's always been categorized as is a great fastball hitter. He got off to a great start last year. I hope that this is not just him feasting on fastballs the way he's shown in the past, and that he has made some sort of a change. Because he has looked fantasy. He's shown that promise that, like you guys said, made him a first-round draft pick out of a college that doesn't historically produce a lot of high-round draft picks. So, but he's looked great so far. There's no denying that.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point about the Florida State League, too, because, I mean, I remember that, you know, back in the day when, you know, the Reds had their affiliate in Sarasota there, I remember watching Devin Mesoraco come up, and I remember being so disappointed looking at his stat lines there when he was hitting, you know, 180, 190, low 200s even, and I remember seeing that he made the Florida State League All-Star team with that, with those numbers, and I couldn't believe it. And then you go, then of course you go to, you know, Bakersfield for a couple of years, where it's the, you know, complete opposite of that, where it's just, you know, every game is 16-15. So it'll be interesting to see what effect that has, you know, on the Reds going forward. You know, obviously, you know, as you mentioned, the pitching years that a couple of those guys had were really impressive, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, how we look at these prospects coming up, these position players, and to see just how they compare.
I don't mean to sidetrack us too much right now, but I'm just looking at, you know, the qualified batting leaders in the Florida State League last year. 792 OPS was the best in the entire league. So,
jeez.
You know, if you, I remember seeing a Fangraphs tweet at one point that was surprising. I think they said it was either 711 or 719 was the average OPS for Florida State League. So, wow. If you throw that caveat in there that for some reason, regardless of what it is, if it's the weather or just the park size or however things play out, it's just not an offensive league at all. It does put Irvin in a little bit of a better light, because then he got up to Pensacola in limited action, had an on-base percentage over 400, which is quite impressive. So maybe he's just kind of been a little bit of a victim of circumstance and where he's been. I know he'll admit that he struggled in Dayton before that, and he had a wrist issue. But yeah, he's absolutely impressive for in spring, and maybe just maybe he's going to have a chance to show a little bit more this year than he's been able to put up in terms of pure numbers in the last couple of years.
For sure. Now, I think going back to guys who have impressed as far as, you know, their starts in spring training have gone, I'm going to kind of go a little bit under the radar here and pick Scott Schebler, who, you know, came over in the Todd Frazier deal. Really wasn't he wasn't the centerpiece of that deal at all. That was, you know, Jose Peraza. But, you know, Schebler just was going to kind of be an extra outfielder. Maybe could be a guy who, you know, could pick up some starts here and there. Kind of what we had in, you know, Chris Heisey, you know, five or so years ago. And really he's come into camp and really has impressed pretty greatly. I think, you know, he's leading the team in home runs. He has two dingers so far. He's second in the team in RBIs so far, and has really shown some pop in that bat that I don't think that we really expected. And he's, you know, really shown with the glove too. So I think that he could, you know, potentially play all three outfield positions, which could be a huge asset for the Reds, especially if there isn't that, you know, everyday left fielder defined like we don't think they're going to have. So, I don't know. Wick, who do you think has stood out?
Yeah, Shetler's been impressive as well. That's the one thing that I keep trying to temper my expectations, because for so many years, the Reds have entered spring training with left field options that are 34 and older, and you kind of know what they are. They're known quantities. It's just a matter of whether or not they're going to luck into being healthy
and
on a hot streak at the same
time. It's really nice to not have to try and convince ourselves into Ryan Ludwig.
Yeah,
hey, Ryan Ludwig was fine when he had
the one year.
When he had Ryan Ludwig was fine when he had two shoulders. I mean,
true.
Ryan Ludwig with one shoulder, that was a problem.
Right.
In theory, Skip Schumacher's the same way. He was had a .330 on base percentage when he had two shoulders. So it's nice to at least have an open perspective when you look at Adam Duvall and Scott Shetler and even Jake Cave, who's performed pretty dang well. In the leadoff spot as a utility outfielder so far in spring training. It's nice to know that you don't have enough data and evidence in front of you when you watch these guys to say, there's no chance they're ever going to be good, because there is upside there. They're still all, you know, even Duvall, mm-hmm. He's 27. He's never really had, in recent years, the shot to be able to play every day. Mm-hmm. And having that, you know, kind of dangled in front of him right now in a kind of a unique left field situation in Cincinnati. They all seem to be jumping at it. Everybody except Yoermer Rodriguez, pretty much.
Right.
But Shetler's impressed, and the fact that he hits left-handed gives him that inside track to really, you know, say, hey, you know, a lot of right-handed pitchers in baseball, I'm going to have opportunities to play a bunch. And so far, he's shown nothing to suggest that he can't carry that. Obviously, it's still just spring training, though. So the Reds have eyes on him in big, big ways. Obviously, they were much higher on him than they were on some of the other Dodgers prospects, which kind of caught people off guard in that trade. But they've put a lot of faith in him to make him the second piece in that trade. And so far, he's backed him up. Whether or not it sustains itself, we'll see. But he's absolutely impressed. There's no doubt about that.
I think so, too. But actually, you brought up Yoermer Rodriguez. Is there a chance that he's going to be the odd man out in this outfield situation?
I think there is. I mean, I think if you look back, the Reds had Jay Bruce traded, and if Jay Bruce is traded, in terms of prototypical upside, there's not a guy better than Yoermer who's a better fit for right field, because he's got a fantastic arm, and for all accounts, he's a solid defender capable of playing center field. He kind of seemed like that guy that would have had, especially since they have options, would have had the inside track for right field. Shetler, I think, could probably cover there. I don't know what his arm looks like at this point, but I think right field's a little bit too much to ask for Cave, and a little bit too much to ask for Duvall as well. So I think right field kind of was his if they could open up the spot for him. But much like with Brandon Phillips and Jose Peraza, Jay Bruce is still the right fielder. So between him being squeezed there and the other left field options being obviously hitting much, much better than he has so far, he might be that guy that gets the squeeze. But the thing is if he is, he's been in previous years and as poorly as he's hit so far in spring training, maybe they can DFA him and nobody's going to claim him. You know, he might have been that bad.
I think his upside is still going to be too promising for somebody not to claim.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, every roster is, you know, most of the time is going to have around five outfielders. There's no way that, you know, there's not going to be somebody that wants him.
And with the lofty expectations that we have this season, I don't see the Reds I don't see a situation where the Reds get rid of him just because they think that they can field a more competitive team this year, as opposed to, you know, he's going to be an anchor on the roster just because of his contract status, but I will be very surprised if they get rid of him.
I think that there's a couple of ways you can look at it, though. I mean, obviously, since we know what they were trying to do with Jay Bruce, like, I think that writing was kind of on the wall there, to where know, they were kind of doing that so they could keep Yorman and, you know, get what they can for Jay Bruce right now, you know, before the season starts. But, you know, I think that they could handle it a different way. I think, you know, it sounds like Jay Bruce is going to start the season as a Red. There hasn't really been too many indications that he's being shopped since, you know, the Baltimore deal fell through.
Well, that nobody, you know, he might be shopped, but nobody wants to buy.
Right. So, you know, maybe you hold on to Jay Bruce and, you know, do something at the deadline where he ups his value a little bit. And, you know, as for Yorman, you know, I can kind of almost see them doing what they did with Juan Francisco a couple of years ago, to where, you know, Juan Francisco stayed on the team for most of spring training, was indicating that he wasn't going to make the roster. I think he was out of options at that point, too, so they just flipped him at the end of spring training and got J.J. Hoover back, who's, you know, the team's closer now. So, yeah, I think that they could do something like that. I think, you know, Yorman has value. I think that, you know, obviously the tools are there. It's just a matter of kind of putting them together. But I don't know. At this point, it looks like there might be too many competitors for that spot, though.
Yeah, and the caveats of that are that Jake Cave is a Rule 5 draftee. Mm. So for the Reds to keep him, he's got to be on the 25-man roster. And so far, he's shown nothing to suggest that he's less prepared for the big leagues right now than Yorman Rodriguez is.
Right.
So he's got that working against them, too. But the other thing that Yorman does have in his favor, as you mentioned it, teams get very, very, very tight on roster spots at the end of spring training. And everybody is, every single team in Major League Baseball is facing the same problem with at least one or two of their guys, where their big guys are out of options, or they took a Rule 5 guy, or they've got more spots than the people that they have kind of fit. You know, they've got too many right-handers and not enough left-handers. Mm-hmm. And perhaps there's a chance that nobody can claim him because they've got to tag somebody else. And perhaps there's a chance that the Reds can trade him and get somebody else that fits their roster farther down the road than Yorman does because another team needs a right-handed hitting outfielder. I don't think a DFA is necessarily in the cards. But it's going to be interesting, and obviously we still got 3 more weeks of spring training where everything could go crazy. But I do think they tried to clear a spot for him, couldn't do it, and now they're kind of pitching a little bit where they have to showcase Jay Bruce, because if they're going to make a move to move him and move his salary off this team's ledger, they're going to have to give him, Bruce, every opportunity to prove that he can do what he can do for the first half of the season, and that makes carrying Yorman and putting him on the bench that much harder of a developmental perspective issue.
Yeah. Well, and keep in mind, too, Bruce really, you know, he's had just as many chances as everybody else so far in spring, but he's, what, four for 15 so far?
Yeah.
Doesn't have a home run yet, so, you know, he's not really impressing, you know, to the level that some of these other guys are, which is kind of concerning, too. So.
Right, for sure. For sure.
I don't know. Anybody else we want to talk about? I mean, as we're talking about outfielders, we should probably at least bring up Jesse Winker. You know, he's been getting a couple of starts in, you know, various places in the outfield. You know, it doesn't sound like, you know, especially from what we were just talking about, it doesn't sound like there's going to be room for him on that roster at the beginning of the season. But I do feel like he's kind of putting himself in a good position to be a solid midseason call-up and kind of take over either that left field or right field spot, depending on, you know, where there's room in the middle of the season.
Which one is the bigger dumpster fire? Yeah.
I mean, right now, you know, if they trade Drake Boos, both of them, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny that, you know, Winker hasn't had that above double A. And I'm not sure Cave has either, honestly. I know he spent most of last year at double A.
He might have got a cup of coffee last year in triple A. I don't remember that.
It's funny how much of a limb the Reds were willing to go on to take Cave as a Rule 5 guy with limited triple A experience, if that.
He got 24 at bats there last year.
Yeah, so. 24 September at bats after everybody else got called up.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how willing they were to make him a roster priority
Yeah. I mean, it was curious, too. I mean, I don't really think we touched on the Rule 5 draft very much, but, you know, the Reds used him with the second overall pick and left, you know, quite a few interesting bats on the table to where, right. you know, right. they, and, you know, even when they picked him, it was kind of a foregone conclusion that he was going to get picked by somebody, but, you know, for what the Reds need, a slap-hitting, you know, center fielder probably wasn't.
Another one?
Shouldn't have been at the top of their list, considering right. they already have one.
Oh. Actually, it would actually be beneficial if Billy Hamilton would become a slap hitter.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
That might be an improvement.
But no, I think it's obvious that Winker fits in the team's plans. From what he's shown so far in spring and limited at bats, you can tell he's got an extremely advanced approach to the plate. I think it was Jonathan Mayo from MLB Pipeline who said he's got a future batting title down the road for him. Obviously, the team is very, very high on Winker, but they're going to be extremely patient with him. Yeah. A, because they can be, and B, because there's no reason not to be, given the circumstances they're operating in right now. But right. Winker's, he's looked the part. Yes, he's looked the part, at least at the plate. I know he's been pigeonholed as a left fielder, and watching him a little bit last night, his arm didn't really impress in like the two or three throws that he had. Not that he was necessarily trying to gun somebody down at third base or not, but it didn't look like it was an asset, so to speak. So, and if that's the case, well, you know, just let him hit, get him some AAA experience, and see how things shake out between now and the trade deadline, because it's obvious there's no real need to rush him up. Well, at the same time, you know, back to the Cave comparison, I don't think they foresee the upside in Jake Cave as they do in Jesse Winker. They see the right now potential in him, and he does at least provide speed, a little bit of on-base ability, and the ability to play center field, which that could be a marketable asset to another team should he play well this year, and then see what happens. So
yeah, for sure.
The only other guy I was going to bring up, though, is Eugenio Suarez, who is making the transition to the base, and so far has really shown like he might be the best right-handed bat in the Reds lineup right now.
Yeah.
Well, at this point.
Very, very well could be. Yeah. I mean, Suarez, as we're recording this, he's, you know, 6-for-12
with what?
three doubles and a homer of those six. So, you know, that's getting it done.
I mean, his competition at this point is Brandon Phillips until we know what the heck is wrong with Devin Mazarocco.
Yeah,
too.
Right. I mean, yeah, there's a bit of a caveat in that best right-handed hitter in the Reds lineup statement, but he's looked good. I think he's had three hits to opposite field at this point as well. Apparently, he put on some weight and bulked up and all the best shape of his life BS that you always hear. But yeah. He's being asked to hit as a third baseman this year and not as a shortstop, which. You know, if that's the career path transition he's being asked to make, so far I feel like he's kind of looked the part offensively for that. And, you know, he had a decent year last year. Not a year very typical based on what you'd expect on his minor league numbers. His walk rates kind of crashed. His strikeout numbers went up a little bit. But he put the ball in play a bunch. And when he did, he had great success. So maybe there's something to him, and maybe put him at third base. He's the kind of guy who can provide, you know, 20 to 25 home runs and solid defense from the hot corner, and maybe do a little bit to help make Jose Peraza not be the only benefactor of Todd Frazier being traded.
Yeah, and I don't want to sound like this is hyperbole or anything, but, you know, if the Reds are – if this rebooting of the Reds is actually going to be successful, they need – Suarez to take that extra step forward. They need him to be able to transition and make up for, you know, the production that we've lost with Todd Frazier, as well as, you know, just wait for shortstop to flush out, whether it's going to be Cozart or if it's going to be Peraza eventually, because from what it sounds like, Brandon Phillips isn't going anywhere, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or even Alex Bandino, if he has a great year this year and jumps in the fray, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's undeniable that if they think Suarez, you know, has only got 1 year of service time to his credit right now, is a guy legitimately able to play third base and play it well, if he puts up the kind of offensive numbers he did last year, with a natural maturation curve as he ages when they've got him under team control. Opening up that path for him, that indirectly becomes a very large part of them trading Frazier. And so far, obviously, you know, we debated the returns of the Frazier deal in the last podcast and whether or not they could have gotten more for him. But if opening that door for Suarez is part of the process and part of their thought process, so far they can't really be shamed for that portion of their mentality. Because he's looked good. He's looked really, really good.
Let's talk about the pitching. We haven't really brought that up yet. You know, to this point in spring training, the Reds' pitching has been largely pretty bad.
Well, the past 2 days, particularly.
The last 2 days. They gave up 11 today, and was it 16 yesterday?
16. So, last night, yes.
So that's not getting it done, to say the least. So, you know, but they, with all that, there have been some bright spots, obviously. You know, with the Reds rotation, there are only a couple of spots that that look to be kind of already filled. You know, really, you know, Anthony DeSclafani isn't going to not make this team. You know, he's struggled in one of his appearances, but yeah, I think
he's got enough of a track record from last year.
He's at the point where, he's at the point where he's not going to rule himself out with a bad spring. But I think there are a couple of guys that are turning heads a little bit on the pitching staff. Mainly, to me, Cody Reed as a starter has been lights out so far. You know, really he's given up one run in five innings. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, and really showing kind of why he is the main prospect of that Cueto trade now that, you know, Finnegan and Lamb are both kind of major leaguers to this point.
And Finnegan's done pretty well so far this spring, too.
Yeah, he's been good. Yeah. You know, and I think that with him, it'll kind of depend on, is he going to stay in the rotation? You know, or is he, or should he be a, you know, a reliever? Where is he going to work out of? But I think that, you know, really he's putting himself to the point where they're not going to, you know, toss him down to AAA, start the year. I don't think it's that kind of situation for him. So,
yeah, with the Reds, it's they've got talent galore.
Yeah.
And their pitching options. The question becomes, you know, how aggressive do they want to be with some of these guys? You know, do they want to be aggressive like they were with Johnny Cueto when they brought him directly up from AA just because they said, hey, he's ready. Screw a year of service time. Let's start him out and do it. Like they were with Michael Lorenzen, who was an outfielder, you know, threw fastballs and closer 2.5 years ago and then was in the rotation in April of last year. Like, if they want to, they could probably put Cody Reed in the rotation right now, you know, or, you know, in 3 weeks when the season starts, and he'd probably do okay, you know. But do you want to start a service clock? Do you want to cost yourself that chance at a seventh year of him? Do you want to break his natural rotation? Do you want to not have him pitch in AAA? They don't have a whole lot of reasons to really want to sacrifice all that future. But they've got a lot of guys they could do it for. I mean, Robert Stevenson is the same way. He pitched great in you know, the B game, so to speak, 2 days ago. But from all reports, has shown three pitches that look great. He's had control of his fastball better in spring than he did towards the end of last year. It's, you know, if they want to do the kid glove style of bringing guys along slowly because they know they're not going to win, you can't fault them for that. That's buying in for the future. That's preventing the kind of payroll crunch that they faced the last 2 years.
Right.
Which, you know, if they'd done that with Mike Leake or if they'd done that with Homer Bailey, they wouldn't have been in the first place. So maybe they've learned from that. Maybe they're hedging towards that. Mm-hmm. But if they don't want to do that, they can take like the Marlins route of, oh, pitch great in Double A, like you're in the rotation now from day one, and see what we can trade you for.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they definitely learned their lesson from like a guy like Homer Bailey, where that was the case where they rushed him up. You know, he obviously, you know, when he came up, it was premature.
And they did it just to get butts in the seats, too.
Yeah. I mean, they did it because in 2007, there wasn't anything going on with the team, so they needed a gimmick at that point. And so it was, you know, bring up your top prospect and, you know, throw him in there and see what happens.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think that they've learned from that to where they won't do that with Stevenson, even though... Yeah, I think Stevenson right now is closer to the big leagues than Bailey was when he came up.
I agree.
But,
yeah.
You know, as you said, Wick, there's no reason to rush anybody
else. Well, they've allowed him to mature, too. And, you know, I know there's not a need to rush, you know, and I agree there's not a, you know, perhaps a need to rush people at this point that we know of. But, you know, we don't know what Iglesias's, what his Capat workload is going to be basically this year. We don't know what Bailey is going to come back with, you know, if he's going to have some rust. I mean, you know, that's 2/5 of the rotation that you were hoping to have pretty iced down. And we don't know, you know, and there are a lot of questions at this point about, you know, the Reds' master plan of making starters into relievers and relievers into starters. You know, whether or not any of these, whether or not Lorenzen can actually, you know, become a starter, whether or not Cingrani is going to be capable spot start still with one pitch.
Yeah.
I mean,
it sounds like Cingrani has been decided on that to where, you know, that I think the Reds are finally admitting that kind of backfired on him. You know, to an extent that, you know, Cingrani didn't learn any more pitches, so that kind of did it for him.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to with the Reds is that somebody's going to have to pitch in September. Like they're going to have 25 games and 26 games in September. And when you roll out a rookie rotation for whatever it was, 57, 59, 67 games to end the season last year, Anthony Scafani was the only one who even sniffed 200 innings. And Raisel Iglesias, who's the presumptive number two starter, who still hasn't thrown a pitch in a Cactus League game this year, only threw 130 innings last year and threw 7 the year before and threw none the year prior to that. if that's what you're counting on to be the front end of your rotation with Homer Bailey not, you know, hopefully back in May, somebody has to pitch those September innings. And how do you manage, you know, do you make the young guys a reliever now and then stretch them out later in the season? Do you have them bounce back and forth between AAA and the majors? You know, Brandon Finnegan can't pitch 200 innings this year. John Lamb might have been the one guy who could, and he's on back surgery rehab right now and won't be back for another couple weeks. So with all those questions in mind, you know, you don't want to take the option of being a, you know, a 5-6 inning starter off the table for any of these guys, you know, whether it's Finnegan or Lorenzen or John Moscott or any of those guys, because you're going to need them to be a starter for at least 5-6, you know, games at some point later in the year anyway. So, you know, the opening day rotation is going to be interesting to watch just from a, you know, a who's performed well perspective. But I, you know, this is one of those years that's shaping up to be, you know, you'd be shocked if there were any fewer than 12 or 13 guys that made starts for the Reds, because there's so few durable arms that, you know, if DeSclafani has a maturation year into 2016 like he had off 2015, he might be the only 200 inning guy on the roster, and that's a lot of innings to pick up for a team with a lot of young arms aside from that. So I think they're going to keep as many of them stretched out as possible. So the opening day rotation is a anointment and something to celebrate for all those guys that make it. But at the same point, there's a lot of guys who are going to be pitching, you know, impressively in starts later in the season that aren't going to be anywhere close to the opening day rotation.
Yeah.
Probably Cody Reed, probably Amir Garrett, probably Robert Stevenson as well. But that gives you something to look forward to for, you know, July and August when they get a chance to get called up.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that too. I think that, you know, The opening day rotation that we see is going to be, you know, probably 4/5 different than, you know, what the closing rotation is of the season. So,
I think there's
a very real possibility of that.
Yeah, if you ask Walt Jocketty and Dick Williams, we thought the best 5 Red starters were going to be in 2016. 3 of them aren't going to be on the opening day roster. And they tell you that right now. If they had to win opening day for $1 billion, you'd see Robert Stevenson and Cody Reed in the staff. I mean, they are the best pitchers right now, but they're manageable assets that they've got to be very, very patient with. And fortunately, they've bought themselves the ability to do that by trading away a lot of impressive players and not being very good on paper.
Right. Say the least. So, I mean, yeah, now outside of those guys, I mean, yeah, spring training has been, that's been my favorite thing about spring training this year so far, has been, you know, getting to watch these young guys and getting to see some of these prospects that we've been hearing about for a couple of years kind of come up and make it to big league camp, because there hasn't been a room for them in years past. You know, I think that, you know, John Moscott's an interesting guy to me. I think that he's probably, you know, he's built like he's going to make the team. Like, I think that, you know, he seems like that kind of workhorse starter, you know, once he gets there. And that's the kind of arm that's going to fit really well with what the Reds need right now. They need a guy who, you know, can put a lot of innings on his arm. And it's, even though Moscott's coming off a pretty bad injury from last year, you know, he's been that guy coming up. I think he's a pretty good bet to start in the rotation. You know, obviously we talked about Brandon Finnegan. I think that's probably where he'll be. But you know, other than that, you know, maybe Michael Lorenzen. It sounds like he's been getting the starts. You know, except I shouldn't say that today, because he got scratched for today's start. He was originally scheduled to go today, and
he was somebody that the Reds had no qualms about putting in the rotation last year, though, too. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't, yeah, he didn't, I guess, for lack of a better term, play his way out of the rotation.
Yeah.
More or less. I think it was more along the lines of, you know, just bad luck near the end of it. But
yeah, Lorenz is an interesting case, because I almost would have loved to have seen how the Reds would have handled his situation had he been a year behind. You know, if his 2015 was, he threw 140 innings in AA and flashed a plus fastball and was working on secondary pitches and yada, yada, yada. Because I think if he was coming up this year the way he did last year, there's no way he'd crack the opening rotation. He was last year very much the way Stevenson and Reed are this year, in that, you know, he was a guy that could pitch right now and pitch fairly decently off and on if you need him to, but you don't really need him to, so why press it? Last year, they were still, you know, they went out and got Marlon Byrd for left field, because that was going to be the difference in making the playoffs.
He was the answer, yeah.
Yeah, so I think they pressed Lorenzen last year, and so it'll be interesting to see how much they press him this year after a very let's be honest, a not very good year in 2015. But he's been on a big league roster now. So is he a big leaguer? Can you send him down? You know, what do you do with Michael Lorenzen at this point? I think the cards will fall where he ends up in the rotation, because, like I said, somebody's got to pitch those innings. And you know, John Moscott's very much the Reds using the arbitration system to their advantage. And I'd be shocked if he doesn't make the opening day rotation at this point, because I think he's the kind of guy that he might get you 180 innings next year, whether they're good, bad, or not, because, like I said, something's got to happen.
Like Moscott, Lorenzen, even to an extent Finnegan, these are all players that the Reds don't have a whole heck of a lot of equity built into them, you know, unlike Stevenson. I guess to an extent Reed, with, you know, these are people that we know we do not want to rush, and we are going to be very careful with these people, because these are lottery tickets, you know, the rest of these guys, they seem expendable, and hey, maybe they can surprise us, and if they do, you know, that's just icing on the cake.
Get some value for them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, use them and flip them, basically.
Yeah, I mean, while these guys are all making $500,000 to $600,000 a year, and it's worth mentioning now, if anybody's still listening 45 minutes into this podcast, there are three Reds pitchers currently under contract making more than the league minimum. Three. Like, mm-hmm. there were nine last year.
And one of them is Homer Bailey, who is not,
pitching.
So
yeah, one of them is Raisel Iglesias, who still hasn't pitched yet. So
right.
And the other one's J.J. Hoover, who's a reliever. So there are no starters.
Hey, our closer.
there are no starters right now that we've currently seen in the spring training that are making over the league minimum. That's the Reds using the system to their advantage. I mean, they're going to get as much out of John Moscott, John Lamb when he's healthy, as they can. They're going to ride those guys because they can. It doesn't cost much, and that if that's enough, they will pay that $600,000 per player in 2016 to bridge the gap to the next level of starter
cannon fodder.
At the same time, you know, I think that's exactly what they're doing. Is they're buying time with these guys, and I think they will buy as much time as possible with the healthy arms that they've got that don't necessarily seem to be the top-tier arms they have, but the durable arms they have. And
that's why Kiva Sampson got, 70 innings last year?
Yeah.
That's exactly how that happens.
I don't want to sound, you know, like, overly optimistic, but this doesn't... this situation isn't completely unlike, you know, 2009 Red season, when it looked like, you know, we've got these... Other than Harang and Arroyo, of course, we've got a number of young starters. There aren't enough rotation spots for them. We just don't know how to play out, how it's going to play out. You know, hopefully these, you know, be great if this particular situation plays out in the fact that, you know, hopefully, you know, as opposed to, you know, just being able to field a rotation of five players, you know, you have a competition and then you have somebody that you can flip, like Travis Wood.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, somebody will end up being Johnny Cueto, hopefully.
Hopefully,
Somebody will end up being Travis Wood and get flipped and be a reliever. Somebody will end up being Sam LaCure and be a valuable bullpen arm for six years.
That you never saw coming, right?
Yeah, and somebody will end up being Zach Stewart that was supposed to be really good and gets flipped for a good asset that you never hear from him again.
Right. I think the Reds have stockpiled, not even stockpiled a lot of those type of players, have stockpiled a ton of those type of players.
Yeah.
To where,
right.
You know, they have more lottery tickets in their minor league system now than I think I have ever seen them have. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, we're...
There's really no telling how this is going to work out. I mean, I think that, you know, what they're doing is they're just stockpiling these high upside arms to where, you know, not necessarily guys who, you know, are blue chippers. They're not stockpiling a lot of those guys.
They have a handful. They don't have the pedigree, but they have the upside. I mean,
right.
You know, this is 44 minutes into recording this. We haven't even mentioned Amir Garrett.
Right.
You know.
Right, which is a perfect example of that, though. He's not going to be your, you know, even your Robert Stevenson or even Cody Wood or Cody Reed. Like, he's not going to be that guy as a prospect, but, you know, if things go right for him, you have a solid number two, number three starter, and, you know, that's valuable. And you didn't, you know, you paid, what, $1 million signing bonus for it?
Yeah.
As opposed to... You know,
we also haven't mentioned Nick Howard, Nick Travieso, or Jonathan Crawford.
Yeah.
You know, former first round draft picks since 2012 that are in the system. You know, they've 4 years from now, if we have a podcast talking about the state of the Reds pitching, we might be wrong on a lot of these guys, but we're going to be talking about one or two of them that turned out to be awesome. I have an inkling on which ones they're going to be. I have opinions on which ones they're going to be. I might be totally wrong. I've been totally wrong a lot before. But there's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of them. However many of them there are, there's going to be a couple that turn into be powerful, healthy, successful arms. And I guess that's the Reds' strategy. They said, look, the more we can get, the more might hit that some are. And if we luck out in five hit instead of two, we've made it. And that's the way they've rolled this rebuild.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it's kind of like in 2012 when we had, what, the entire season, five starters, basically.
Yeah.
You know, or, well, one spot start from, what was the guy named? Not Jeff Francis.
Todd Redmond?
Todd, yeah, there we go.
That's a trivia question right there.
Yeah, the guy that was drafted. He was drafted ahead of Kershaw, right?
He was like the pick before Kershaw.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was start number 162 for the Reds that year, with the other 161 being the same five guys.
Yeah.
Well, let's start wrapping it up, I think. You know, really there's not a ton more to talk about here at this point in the season. We're probably going to check in periodically throughout the rest of spring. You know, obviously a lot could change between now and then. You know, the injuries have still kind of been an issue for the Reds to this point, but, we're just going to sit back and enjoy this and see how the roster plays out and see, you know, who we'll get to see at a Great American Ballpark this year.
Yeah. At the very least, we'll be able to enjoy parts of it. You know, I highly doubt it's going to be a pennant race this year.
Probably not.
With us involved, at least. You know, maybe we can play spoiler for some of the...
It's true. There will be a pennant race this year.
I don't expect
the Reds to be in it.
It will mostly be between, you know, which team, you know, which garbage people's teams are going to be in competition. Probably the Cubs and the Cardinals.
That's probably a good bet.
Yeah,
but that's the one thing about baseball that's always made me more of a fan of it than any other sport, which is that all these guys we talked about that aren't even going to contribute this year, they're Reds. You know, they're not Indiana Hoosiers or Kentucky Wildcats or Xavier Musketeers waiting to be drafted. They're in the system, like they're part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, however they perform this year, whether the big league Reds suck or not, and they're probably going to suck. The bats might be good, the Blue Wahoos might be good, and we're going to learn a lot about how good the Reds are going to be in 2017 and 2018 by following them as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can wrap your head around that, keep that many eyes on the back burner of the Reds this year, there's going to be a lot of fun stuff to watch, and that's how you have to watch this year if you want to enjoy yourself. That's kind of how it comes down to.
Yep. Yeah. But as always, though, we're rooting for the team. We're rooting for the name on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back of the jersey.
Right on.
Depending on who it is, doesn't matter.
Unless you're Coach Cal.
Good point.
Sorry.
Oh, had to throw that in.
Had to twist the knife into that one.
Go doors.
All right. Well, we'll kind of keep checking in here within the next few weeks. You know, there's still 3 weeks left of spring training, so there's a lot that's going to still be decided. So keep tuned to Red Reporter. We've been previewing the big league roster to this point with our Red Report series, which we're eight in today. So you know we're trying to get all 25 guys by the time opening day starts, so stay tuned for that.
This is going to be one of those seasons where you just want to get like a good, happy, drunk buzz going to really enjoy baseball, to enjoy Reds baseball, particularly at the major league level. Yeah, you know, so you know, perhaps we'll be trying to work that into you know our shtick this season.
It's true.
Just this season for the first time, right?
Well, make it a little bit more, you know, official as opposed to, you know, what are you drinking? Oh, anything to numb the pain of having to watch Kevious Sampson pitch.
Assuming his tricep injury isn't so bad that he can't pitch.
another injury discussion. Can't wait. Yeah. But, so let's wrap this up. You know, make sure to come visit us at redreporter.com. Follow us on Twitter at redreporter, facebook.com/redreporterfans. I think we have a Snapchat now. That's exciting.
Really?
I think so.
Why?
I don't know. I'm not. You know what? If I was 19, I might be able to tell you, but but we have one. So
you will tell
so
us.
Follow
if we,
it. There's probably stuff
us
on
if,
it.
You will tell us if we end up on Pinterest, right?
To me.
Do we have an Etsy account?
I don't think so.
No, but are we on Peach?
I don't know what that is.
Oh.
All right, well, follow us on whatever social media platform you...
Or just holler at us from outside. Just yell outside.
Yeah.
Put on your phone and say Red Reporter.
Go to the ballpark and just yell Red Reporter for 20 minutes. Somebody will find you.
Yeah, unfortunately, it'll probably be Jeremy, but yeah. That's okay.
So let's wrap this up. For Scott and Wick, I'm Brandon. Peace out.
See ya.
See you next time.
Bye, guys.